It's Thanksgiving week. I'm doing a stroll down memory lane this year. Thanksgiving means something slightly different to cooks, at least to this cook. We have families too, but we get kind of excited about the possibilities. At least I do. And this year is no different, but the things to make have changed for need and want, and I'm kind of going to get into that. Episode 217, the Eating Liberty Podcast, food and freedom once a week for life. Hello, folks. It is, as mentioned, the Thanksgiving episode. Now, I am going to mention the pumpkin cheesecake. Yeah, I know. I'll tell you now that the recipe is on the show notes page. If you are that person who hates cheesecake, and you're right that many of them, oh my, they're worth hating. This is not that one. I'm certain that's so because more than a few of those very same people try to slice to be kind and asked for a second slice. Yes, it's that good. For some of us on this Thanksgiving week, it's time to shine. Lists and plans and organization and all this prep, baking and cooking and stock making and vegetable cutting and, well, it's fun. It's crazy and chaotic and it's fun, but there's never enough space and always too much stuff. The advantage I have, at least here in the cold part of the country, is I get to use my walk-out cooler. If you live in Florida or Texas, you don't have one of those. I just go to my back door, open it up, and it's refrigerated. It's colder. It's freezer cold. It's a fun option to have. My first memories probably of Thanksgiving exist as, I don't know, five or six. We all would go to my dad's mom's house, Grandma Shakta. She lived in a teeny little house, had a full basement, right just almost in Detroit. If you go across the street and you're in Ferndale. And this was a subdivision built way back when Chrysler was growing. Well, all three of them were growing, but my grandpa worked for Chrysler. And it was homes for the new workforce for the auto industry. And they lived there, well, for ever, it seems. Grandma Shanta had, it was a small little kitchen. But she had what I thought was the most amazing cooking vessel. It had a range that was like a drawer. It was maybe, I don't know, I'm sure in real life it was smaller than my childhood memory is, but maybe 4 feet wide. And you pull it out and that had the burners, the electric burners. And then oven, maybe two ovens on top with glass doors so you can see what's going on. And Grandma did Thanksgiving dinner all by her onesie, and I don't know that I was there to hear it, but the story is that Grandma Shanta kept her verbal cool, and I'm told that the only time anybody actually heard her swear was when the sauce boiled over and she said, oh, excrement, but, you know, in the shorter version. But this massive turkey and everything would make its way downstairs. And so there was, we started as just three, my mom and dad and me, and then my sister, then my brother. And my aunt and uncle ended up with five kids over. And so seven adults because of my aunt. And then up to 10 kids, there's a lot of people. And the one, you know, when you're a kid, you don't know. Well, what I now know is, and is that my grandma cooked the turkey to dead and then a little bit more just to make sure. My goodness, that thing was overcooked. It was just like chewing sand. But nobody got sick. She used to do a weird thing, and I never understood the reason why. And it's that I don't know where it came from, that family mythology of I'm doing for my tradition of baking and cooking what my mom and her mom and her, and just, you know, this whole thing is passed on a line. There's the story about cutting the ends off of the Christmas ham. Well, why do you do that? Well, because that's how big the stove was. So grandma used to put a diaper, cloth diaper. Some of you may not know those exist. Cloth diaper on top of the turkey, buttered it, probably, and then would baste. Well, basting turns out to be maybe not such a good idea. The cloth diaper, I don't know what it did, but the skin became very golden and it smelled great. But anyway, so there was all this massive amount of food and we all ate downstairs. And now I might be confusing my holidays. I'm sure we had pumpkin pie, but grandma's dessert always goes back to a slice of Neapolitan ice cream. And so all of the cousins, all eight of us or so, or fewer when I was younger, we would, without fail, almost like deliberately, we would eat the ice cream too quickly, get an ice cream headache, complain about it, and then go and do it again. Well, you know, we weren't overly smart when we were kids. But anyway, so the family, when we were Polish, that whole getting together, doing the thing, the same thing every year. And so they're, you know, I don't remember what else was there. I'm sure there were at least two kinds of potatoes and rolls, and I really truly don't remember. I remember the turkey and brain freeze. So I mentioned Detroit. Though there is another Thanksgiving tradition for Detroiters, and that is watching the Lions lose. Now, in honesty, I don't actually know what the record is, and I didn't bother to look it up because it isn't that important to know. I'm pretty sure during the Billy Sims era and the Barry Sanders era, they won a few of those Thursday Thanksgiving football games, but it feels like it was just, let's get disappointed again. One more Thanksgiving Detroit tradition, watch the Lions lose. It was the thing to do. My first memory of Thanksgiving as an adult coming back home was coming back that first Thanksgiving after starting cooking school. And I had also landed a job at a place outside of Detroit in a suburb called Southfield. Now, the restaurant's name was Douglas, yeah, French for Douglas. The owner was a Detroit's favorite child at a point, and his name was Doug Greck, and he had years before my time, a local, and before cable access was a thing, whatever that was called, TV show was quite a name in Detroit, and with some fair amount of skill. When I got there, I think Doug was a little bit tired, but he certainly, so Doug's big thing, one, being a fairly competent cook, was extraordinarily flamboyant. And one of the big things in the food scene in Detroit at the time was this thing he had concocted called a sac de bonbon. Now, at the time, the candy company Godiva used to give you your truffles in a very special little bag. What was special about it was they had the regular gold paper outside like they still have, but immediately inside was a wax paper bag. and they were sort of glued or something at the bottom together. And I don't know why they did this, but you would get this sort of double bag every time you went to buy truffles from the Detroit area, maybe any dive, I suppose. They stopped doing that at some point, but that little bag, which had maybe, I don't know, 3-inch by 1.5-inch base and is tall, maybe 8-inch tall bag, that wax paper was a real bonus for somebody who was creative enough to figure out if you paint the inside of the bag with melted chocolate, let it harden, and then fill it with three different kinds of mousse, dark chocolate, white chocolate, and milk chocolate, then peel the whole bag off. So what you have is a chocolate sack filled with three different kinds of mousse. Then you put raspberry sauce and raspberries and all sorts of other fruit embellishments on top. Put it on a, now Doug didn't do anything on the cheap, the Villeroy & Bosch Amapola plate. Put that on top of that plate with some raspberry sauce, and that's your dessert. And I have no idea, back in, yes, 1983, I have no idea what we got from that. It was probably $12 or $15, and people paid it happily. It was enough for two. I don't know if that ever happened. But so my big idea was to come home and make sac de bonbon for everybody. And everybody happened to be my stepfather, my mom, my brother, my sister, and a few step-siblings, and maybe a girlfriend, mine and maybe the step-siblings. So 10, 12, and then maybe some others. So I don't know. We had 10, 12, 15 people, which was a lot of mousse to make. Well, I pulled it off. Mostly out of ignorance, not of competence, and it was, man, it was really impressive. It was pretty awesome. That specific dessert, for years afterward, my brother kept asking, make that, and I never did, for a variety of reasons. But that same Thanksgiving, I made homemade pumpkin soup, which was really fantastic, and found a bunch of mini pumpkins to use as the serving vessels. And I made homemade croutons, and I overcooked them. Now, they weren't burnt, but boy, how do you dance and raid up close to that edge? Turned out that it worked. Because the soup was really, really rich with fresh cooked pumpkin and lots of cream. And so the contrast of that highly caramelized crouton against that very rich soup really worked. And it was a complete, total screw up that had a fantastic success. So I got lucky, at least two dishes, and I can't remember what else I made or what else I made, including vocabulary. I'm sure there was something, but the soup and the sac de bonbon dessert really stand out. And I was looking for a picture somewhere. I don't know where it went in the many years between here and there. It has disappeared, but it was impressive. It was a fun thing to see. I mentioned Gordon, my stepdad, and when they started dating, and he would show up with increased frequency at the house, my brother, who then was probably, three or four, as 3 or 4s or year olds are probably want to do, "You're here again, what do you want?" Well, then, your mother, as it happens, is what he wanted. And they got married, and we moved to a new town, small town, found a house, tore apart the house. There's actually a link I'm going to post to this. I'm going to make a note to do that about them finding this house and the work it took to make it habitable. It was an impressive story, and it's an impressive, there's a picture of the house when it was first built, which was an amazing find. But so we got in the house, we moved there, we lived there. And every night, maybe even before that house, but I really remember it here, dinner was served, everyone sat down, which I think is a strange thing these days. So everybody sits down, 6 o'clock, dinner was ready, and every day, no matter what, without fail, he would proclaim, "It's a feast!" And now that means, you know, pass the food, everyone, you know, dig in, fill your plates, and devour your food. And at first it was like, this is kind of cool, this is interesting, we had never heard that before, this was a new thing. And it meant first an appreciation for the work that went into making dinner, because making dinner for five, and then at one point we took in a foster brother. The situation in town was that he needed to find another place to live, because where he was currently living wasn't just something, a change needed to happen. And so we said yes. We had the room, so we said yes. So Mike came, was there for a couple of years till he graduated, and then went on and did whatever it was that Mike did. He's still in Michigan. So five or six of us, every day it's a feast. And it's sort of, you know, Gordon was a child of the Depression era, and he lived in a pretty poverty-struck town in northern Michigan, not too far from where we were living, in a county called Antrim County. Big deal, who cares? If you live in Antrim County, it's a big deal, but it's a place in northern lower Michigan that suffered some hard times and sort of stayed that way. And if you know anybody who either was an adult through or a child in the Depression era, it made a mark. Those folks didn't see the world the way a couple of generations later would see the world. Scarcity was real. Shortage was a real thing. And lots of times people went without because, A, they didn't have the means to get it. And sometimes if they did, the thing wasn't there to get. So it's a whole different mindset. And the other thing that started to sort of sink in was, it's a feast was also an expression of the abundance. Now, the irony of it is that Gordon was a realtor forever since I knew him. So through the Ford years and the Carter years, and if you lived that, you know that between the Carter years and the Reagan years, man, oh man, that was some hard time. And for a realtor who wasn't selling houses because people weren't really buying houses, to acknowledge abundance in a, frankly, this was one of the biggest houses in all of our town. Now, we spent all summer tearing it apart and rebuilding it. So it wasn't like we just went. We definitely earned this house with sweat equity. But there was an acknowledgement of grace and bounty and privilege that we had a house to sit in and food to eat, and that meant a lot. Restaurants, some, the one in Naples, Florida, where I worked, celebrated Thanksgiving by opening up for Thanksgiving dinner. Oh my God, the food. I think we bought, now commercial cases come 4 turkeys to a box. I think we bought 35 cases of turkeys. That's a lot of turkeys. That's a lot of ovens. That's a lot of roasting. It's a lot of storage. And then there's all and the full deal of accompaniments and dressing and mashers and sweets and Brussels sprouts and green bean casserole and desserts. And oh my God, the amount of work in this little, I mean, it wasn't that little, but you get that much stuff in there, it becomes really small real fast. And we did it. We pushed it through. We ran in two shifts. First shift came in at, I think, 3 or 4 in the morning to get everything ready. Second shift came in noonish, and nearly everything was gone. We had turkey stock to last forever. But that was the thing. And I don't even remember how we pulled it all off. It was probably, it's been more years than I can actually even really count, but you know, hotels do that, and I'm sure we did that at the Ritz, and I just don't remember it. Some restaurants, that same restaurant that did the Thanksgiving dinner with, you know, the two shifts, interestingly, sort of almost as a joke, he acknowledged commercially one holiday. It was one day out of the year he wouldn't open for business, and that was the very sacred Super Bowl Sunday, closed for service. So most private restaurants would close for Thanksgiving and maybe a day or two up to it, and even possibly the weekend after it. The private club in Tallahassee did that. The private restaurant that worked at in Tallahassee, I think we may have been closed on a Friday, but definitely opened up on Saturday, and maybe even opened up on Friday for a little bit, for people who are really just tired of turkey and tired of relatives. Since I've had kids going on, good Lord, almost 16 years, Thanksgiving has changed a little bit. So Thanksgiving changed when Gordon came in, and the view on food changed when Gordon came in. So my wife and your wife or your husband brought a very particular set of preferences, customs, traditions, and wants to the Thanksgiving table. And My wife's grandma's dressing, I never met her, but she's taking good dressing. It's also on the blog. It's called sweet potato souffle, but it's not really souffle. It's pureed sweet potatoes with some eggs and a little bit of cream added to it, and then you melt marshmallows on top. It's really quite yummy. The marshmallows are a little too sweet. Green bean casserole. I have changed it here from getting the cans of green beans and the cans of mushroom soup to buying fresh green beans and make my own cream of mushroom soup. Still the same idea. I've tried making my own fried-ish crispy onion to go on top. And quite frankly, I can't do better than French's does. And so we use the commercial stuff because they have mastered consistency and expectations. We've moved into smoked turkeys because I like the flavor. I like the color. I do brine turkeys. That's just what happens. Even if they're going to be roast, I brine them. Always veg underneath the turkey, and quite a bit of it to hold it up, because what I want to have happen is I want the veg to sort of caramelize, and I can cut them kind of small. I want the veg to caramelize in all the yummy turkey fat that's coming down. So when I go to deglaze that part, now, so lift the turkey out of the pan, put them on the platter, let it rest, cover the foil, and no kidding, 30 minutes. Maybe longer, depending on the size of the turkey. It's going to be fine. And make the pan gravy with all of that veg in there because it tastes good. And carrots, celery, onions, parsnip, fennel, That's what I would use. That's what I do use. If there's something else you want in there, you would add it. I think not too much more would really go, except that Thanksgiving you could maybe add rutabaga to that. Unless you don't like rutabaga, and I do. But then, you know, make your pan gravy in that pan. Man, that's some good stuff. And homemade cranberry sauce. We did one year, and we're doing it again this year. I forgot who the woman is on NPR. Does a kind of horseradishy, chilled cranberry relish. I thought, what in the heck is this craziness? Well, I'll tell you what. Oh, Stamberg, I think that's her name. Oh my goodness, it's really good. So if look up the relish part, something different, still cranberry, but a completely different twist on cranberry. And the horseradish part really works. It's, the cold is the big deal. The dressing had to have her dressing, and she's sort of in charge of making it. And when, and I've had my mother-in-law show us how to do it just to make sure, we get it right. Lots of bread and corn and cornbread mixed together because they are from the South. Lots of celery, an unbelievable amount of, poultry seasoning. And lots of very rich chicken stock, more than you think, and a couple of eggs, and it really is, oh my God, it's so good. Yeah, it's not keto, but holy crap, is it good. And that was tradition for a few years, up until last year. Now, we've had to go to gluten-free here, and there's a few medical reasons for that. And so last year, my wife said, yeah, I'm going to cheat. And so we made the real deal gluten-filled dressing. And, well, it didn't really play nice. So we're doing the GF version this year. So this is an adaption that happens. Things change. We have to alter. We don't have to. And we sometimes alter what our choices are, what our menu items are, given on circumstances and need. And so gluten-free is now one of the things we do. And that for soups and sauces, that's absolutely not a problem because sorghum flour is gluten-free and thickens almost exactly the same as gluten flour and pretty much one-to-one. I know I say that's not true. In this case, it's true. Now, for 5 gallons, it may be different, but I'm doing the small quantities here, teaspoon of flour, teaspoon, did I say tablespoon? Same one, teaspoon, tablespoon of wheat flour to sorghum flour. It thickens the same for your macaroni and cheese, for your mushroom sauce, for your green bean casserole, and it tastes fine. It looks good. It's a quality product. I'm very impressed with it. But, so the one change we've made for the pumpkin cheesecake used to be regular graham cracker bottom. They make, I don't know who they are, I forgot the name brand, somebody, Yellow Box, makes a very acceptable gluten-free graham cracker. It's like, wow, pretty dang good. I've made gluten-free graham crackers that are like, wow, it was pretty dang good. One thing that I don't manage to achieve is that consistent shape and all that other stuff. Mine shrink a little bit and they pull this way and that way, but the flavor is amazing. I think this year I'm going to twist that and make a gluten-free ginger snap to then turn that into the crust for the already gluten-free pumpkin cheesecake. So here's the thing about the pumpkin cheesecake. Now, usually, and this is a problem with most cheesecakes served in most restaurants, and I'm making some generalizations here, is that they're probably purchased from the food purveyor and they probably came in frozen, and they are absolutely detestable. They're horrible. They aren't worth eating. They're yuck. What makes them yuck is they're far too dense, much too sweet, and all they taste is just They don't have flavor. They're just like, oh my God, it's a sugar headache and then some fat. Well, the way you fix that is take out the sugar, not all of it, take out a good part of the sugar, add something flavor in there. So pumpkin has a lot of flavor. This has got 1.5 pounds of cream cheese, so it's going to be a tall cheesecake. And the other thing that's really nice about this cheesecake, and you have to plan ahead because you can't plan behind, make the cheesecake 2 days out, and then once it's fully cooled, it gets a sour cream topping. Sour cream mixed with some powdered sugar. You have to check the web page for the ratios. I don't remember. But you mix those two things together, and they're going to be kind of, it's going to look soupy. It looks like sour cream. What? Put it on top and spread it smooth all the way to the edge of the pan. Let that chill overnight, and the sour cream turns firm. So when you cut into it, and there's a picture on the webpage, you get this nice tricolor thing, this beautiful white, which adds flavor, a little bit of sugar, but you get the tart of the sour cream, the richness of the pumpkin cheesecake, and then that nice gingery, snappy, yes, I did that on purpose, of the crust. Man, it's really nice. And it isn't that disgusting, gloppy insulin. You know, you're going to spike your insulin, but it's not, it's just that frozen stuff is just terrible. It's just awful. It's to be avoided. If you're going to ban anything, ban that. And then we make those other desserts. And I sometimes went a little bit overboard, so I'm gonna pull that back this year. But I am making a dessert for Friday. So normally, Thanksgiving is here at my house, and we would have some people over. We're doing a new thing this year. We are the guests at some friends. And so we're bringing a few things. The cheesecake, Brussels sprouts with bacon and gorgonzola. My wife's going to make the sweet potato casserole, whatever you call it. I'm going to make some gluten-free dinner rolls. And then for some hors d'oeuvre things, snacky things, I did smoked almonds last week, second time, and I'm really happy with them. So I'm going to do that again. And then I made last year some keto spiced pecans. I'm like, wow, this is really good. So I'm going to do those things, and then we're going to take that over. But the cheesecake will probably be gone. So I have to make something else. I found a recipe for a cranberry upside down cake that I'm going to give a try because it looked really nice. And that sounds like a fun thing to try. Something different. So different is a good thing to bring in. We'll see how it goes. I'm looking forward to it. And then the thing we are going to do this week, even though we're having dinner someplace else, is we won't have any turkey. Now, maybe they'll send us with some, but I did buy a turkey breast. I'm going to brine that in the next day or two, and I'm going to smoke it because we still have a fairly new tradition of Thanksgiving, post-Thanksgiving pizza. Now, we did this thing first, probably 4 years ago, and it was a gluten crust on a half sheet pan, and now, people do all different kinds of versions of this, but it was, maybe sweet potatoes went down first, like the sauce, and then just layers of everything. And just so I cut the dressing into thin slabs and put that on, then turkey, maybe mashed potatoes, Brussels sprouts, cranberry sauce. We had a big cheese board, which included then we had a brie and a fontina, and just literally loaded all the, and green bean casserole, loaded everything onto this pizza and baked it until it was very well done. And again, this is not keto. This is just, your pancreas is going to be mad. But holy crap, was that good. So we've done that every year. So this Friday, we have friends coming over to engage in some cards of inhumanity and dessert. And then so maybe we'll move Thanksgiving pizza to Saturday, but we're doing it. And I'm going to do a gluten-free crust instead of gluten crust, and then the same old thing. But we'll have the gluten-free dressing on top and the gravy and just... It's gonna be awesome. It's decadent. I'm getting full and bloated thinking about it. But oh man, is it so good? Yeah. Anyway, all right. So that's a romp down memory lane. It wasn't a very long romp, but it's fun stuff to think about, and it's not to bring it down too much, but I'm looking at 60. Not yet, but not too far away. And some of the things I did not expect to be the case was outliving both of my parents and my stepfather and my brother, my younger brother. I didn't expect that to be the case. I was really, I had thoughts that we would all end up back in Michigan. Kind of in that house, but that probably wouldn't, and that's not going to happen. So that changed too, and I had nothing to do with it and couldn't control it in any way, shape, or form. So change happens, some of it good, some for the bad, and you have to deal with it, whatever you get, and so we are. But I reflect on the times with the people that I miss, the people that I love, and now I have new people that I love that I can share that with, and that's what Gordon meant. It's a feast. Enjoy a holiday. All right, folks, that's going to do it. I will put the the link for the page about the house. Boy, that's esoteric. The road was called Darman Place, and so it's going to be a link about Darman Place. I'll put a link to, there's a whole page of Thanksgiving stuff, which includes just, I don't know, there's a dozen, maybe more recipes there, including the cheesecake, including a link to Thanksgiving, post-Thanksgiving pizza, and also to pie crust, because everyone wants to make pie crust. So make my pie crust, not my pie crust, make the pie crust that's there. I didn't invent it, but I did steal a technique from somebody that makes pie crust work very easy to do, and it comes out beautifully, and anybody can do it. Truly, really anybody can do it. So that's just to help you get started. If you need help, if you don't need help, then that's fine. But the Darman story is a fun story, a little bit about Gordon and Liz, and that should get you started on your Thanksgiving prep. And I think there's also a prep list there if you need it. And also, since it's Thanksgiving, I don't know how quickly they'll ship, but and I don't even know if they have Beaujolais Nouveau, which is, you know, the for particular class of people, they group class, maybe. The traditional celebration wine of the Thanksgiving holiday season is Beaujolais Nouveau. But you can check out California Wine Club and see if they've got that, or for your Christmas present wants and needs for your wine friends, visit culinarylibertarian.com/CAwine. I'll verify that, and I'll put it on the show notes page. I realize I may have told you the wrong thing. But anyway, that's going to do it, and I'll see you next week. Music for the Culinary Libertarian podcast is provided by Matthew Bankert at mattbankert.com.